This is a sugya that will take us more than a week. I think guys began to recognize over the course of afternoon storm this week. There's a lot going on here, and as you saw, the Mar Makamas are organized sort of in a two-tier format. Prefers to see sort of the sugya and the straightforward seifim, and then we'll turn our attention to the less straightforward seifim. So what I'd really like to do today, we continue next week, I'd like to do today is maybe a preliminary chabur, just to sort of get our feet wet together, to begin to see some of the halacha lemaisa that emerges, and maybe to sketch out some questions, and then we'll have a path forward for next week. The Gemara about how you define, as the Rashi puts it, what is Bishul Akam, in the sense of how much, not what sort of food or who qualifies as an Akam or what process qualifies as Bishul, but how exclusively does it have to be Shal Akam? In other words, how much Jewish participation do you need in order to make it no longer Bishul Akam? So that's a sugya that sort of starts and stops in interesting ways. From Lamed Ches Amud Aleph to Lamed Ches Amud Beis. So the first thing that strikes us is Lamed Ches Amud Aleph is about the Jew first and then the Nachri, and Lamed Ches Amud Beis is about the Nachri first and then the Jew. Okay? Lamed Ches Amud Aleph is Hiniyach Yisrael. You begin with Hiniyach Yisrael, Basa Gabi Gechalam, V'ba'akam, V'hafach Ba. You have the comment of Shmuel, and you have the comment of Rabbi Yochanan. Two Amoraim for the first generation, two Amoraim who were both Talmidim of Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi. So the Gemara first tells that both of them are talking about a situation, or they seem to talk about a situation, where the Jew begins the process and the non-Jew jumps in, and the question is that a problem or not? So Shmuel seems to say that that's not problematic at all. Shmuel seems to say, well, if the Jew got things started, then it's fine. The Jew put the basar gavi chalom, puts down a slab of raw meat on the grill, and then apparently walks away, and the non-Jew takes over. Ba'akam v'hafach bo. Non-Jew comes by and turns it. And again, at first you assume that hafach bo means he's turning the meat. There is a Rashi that we'll be coming back to later on, who translates hafach bo differently. So it sounds like it's all mutter, but the Amoraim say not so pashut, or it's too pashut. Either it's too pashut or it's so not pashut that it's wrong. If the Jew put it on the fire, so did the Jew do the bishul? Did the Jew not do the bishul? If what the Jew did was sufficient, and what the non-Jew, his subsequent turning of the meat, was really not necessary, would have cooked anyway, so of course it's mutter. Tamar pashut. If what the non-Jew did was critical, so then, in other words, what the Jew did was insufficient to cook the meat, so then the Jew did not do the bishul. And the non-Jew did the bishul. And now the Jew put puts the meat, so we showed him talk about a case of, you know, putting a pan into the oven. How deep, if the fire, heat source is in the back of the oven, so how you need to push it far enough back, you're not dealing with a modern oven, you want to push it deep enough into the oven that it's actually in a hot enough spot that things could bake or cook. The Jew, or you have the grill. Let's say you have a coal grill. You don't have the coals evenly distributed across the entire grill. So the Jew put the meat on the edge of the grill where it's really not hot enough to cook. And then the non-Jew comes by, and if it would have stayed there, could have stayed there for hours and hours, it wouldn't have grilled. And then the non-Jew comes by and slides the meat over. So then the Gemara says that's the second case. That's not just pashut that's mutter. It's actually not even true that's mutter. That's taka aser. That's taka asi lahafich balav bashal. So then that taka is bishul. That's not bishul Yisrael. What does it matter that the Jew put it down on the grill? Yeah, but on a cold part of the grill or a warm, but not a hot enough spot in the grill. And if the Jew brings the raw meat into the kitchen and puts it down on the counter, so bishul Yisrael? No, of course not. The non-Jew took the meat off the counter, put it in the oven, put it on the stovetop. So that's bishul nakum. So the Gemara says, in any situation, even the Jew put it in the oven on the grill, but in a spot where it would not have baked, it would not have cooked. So what the Jew did the first step, but the Jew's first step was insufficient. That's not called bishul Yisrael. That is called bishul. That is bishul bishulei shel akum nino. So the Gemara says it must be there's an in between state. That what that what the Jew did was sufficient, but what the non-Jew did was still substantive. It would have cooked with the Jew alone, but the Jew, non-Jew did kiruv bishul. But the Jew did, it would have baked eventually. It wasn't a hot spot, mm-hmm. but hot mm-hmm. enough to bake. But the non-Jew moved into a hotter spot where you're going to get different results. So that's still mutter, but a chiddush that's mutter. I could have thought that the non-Jew is doing kiruv bishul. The non-Jew is moving is accelerating the bishul process. So maybe that's enough to say it stops being bishul Yisrael, it begins to be bishul akum. So the Gemara says, kamashmo, it's still mutter. Okay, and it's worth noting, but we'll have to come back. We've shown him do on this line wonder about what? We show him our wondering about what's the kamashmo. I think you already may have seen a little bit, and we'll see more next week. That the Rishama, but it's, whenever the Gemara has a Kamashmalon and doesn't have anything after the Kamashmalon, it typically that's a red flag. You're going to want to know. As the Gemara says, I would have thought the din is X because of the following Hanacha, Kamashmalon, the din is not X. What happened to the Hanacha? And what changed? Is that we reject Kiruv Bishul? Or think Kiruv Bishul is nothing? Or Kiruv Bishul is something, but something changed about the definition of Bishul Akum? Because again, one of the things that definitely is intriguing, even as you start the sugya, that hopefully will become clearer and clearer as you dig deeper, is if the guy cooks it, so then it's bishul akum. If a Jew cooks it, it's bishul Yisrael. If they both are involved, so it's sometimes mutter because what? Because it's not bishul akum, or because it's both, and bishul Yisrael v'nachri. We're trying to eliminate to make it mutter, you need to eliminate the nachri's role entirely. Or it just needs to be a shituf pula, if it's a combination, that's mutter. So to figure out what the hagdara is, when the Jew does enough, participates enough, then it's mutter because we can define it as what. So that's something that we're going to be searching for as we're looking at. Right now, right, they can always sort of give us an intriguing ambiguity. I would have thought that the Jew put on the fire and it's going to cook. And the non-Jew comes by and shifts it to a hotter spot where it'll cook more quickly. A little thought's asked because they're non-Jew kiruv bishul, which would mean that they're both cooking. The Jew did a ma'is bishul and the non-Jew did a ma'is bishul. So kamashulon, there's still mutter. Yeah, you had a question?
No. When it says that the yid leaves it on sufficiently for it to cook, I know that the post can discuss it later on. But when it's said here, does it mean it's left on enough for it to cook the makom ben yosai or enough for it to be cooked fully?
Yeah, that's a good question. The Rashba and the Rush. Let's assume. Well, let's say the very next line of the Gemara sort of addresses that, or at least attempts to address that. And yes, in this sugya, we are doing in Chaburis, for those who are new, or if are not reading the Gemara line by line, but this sugya, as we're going to see increasingly, is very intertwined with the Gemara, both what the Gemara says and what the Gemara doesn't say, and maybe some of the discontinuities in the Gemara. So here, that's why, as I said before, it's a preliminary chabur in the sense we really want to dig into the Gemara and notice some of the dinim and notice some of the problems. And then set the stage, mitzvah for next week. So the Gemara says, well, how could you tell me that if both of them are participating, it's mutter, I bet Ravasi quotes Rabbi Yochanan, kol shu kamach ben drusai, and ben mishnu mishuli akum. Once it's kamacho ben drusai, then there's no problem bishul akum. Ha eno kamacho ben drusai is bishul akum. If it wouldn't be kamacho ben drusai, then it is bishul akum. So number one, what macho ben drusai means, for those who are not yet learned Hilchos Shabbos, macho ben drusai means not a stage where it's not fully cooked, but is barely somewhat edible. Machlokes Rishonim whether it means half cooked, a third cooked. Ben drusai was some sort of gangster, a mobster who was off on the run from the law. So he had to eat quickly. Often he was on the run. He had to take a piece of meat and just throw it on the fire for a couple of minutes. It would be very rare done. And he was already gobbling it down and off before the cops could catch him. So somehow, hard to know how this Russia had the schos that his name appears in Shas many, many, many times. It appears in later Sifra Halacha tens of thousands of times. So it had some holy grandfather or grandmother, and some schos. Ben Jerusalem. Anyways, So Rav Asi says, so usually in other areas of halacha, the definition of bishul, minimal bishul is getting something to macha ben drusai. I take a piece of raw meat on Shabbos and I put it on the fire, I get it over 33% or 50% cooked, and I take it off, even though most people would rather have it more fully cooked, but that's already enough to say that I violated bishul b'Shabbos. That's already a minimal act of bishul. It sounds like once you got to macha ben drusai, no longer problem bishul akum. So right away, by the way, it's not, the Gemara assumes that that's relevant here. The Gemara assumes that that's the case of Jew first as opposed to the case of the non-Jew first. Why? Because if anything, the case of a non-Jew first, the more cooking that occurs, the worse off you are. Obviously, from the fact we're saying, once you get to this point, you're safe. That means that initially you're okay, and things may later go wrong. In other words, it started as Bishul, obviously we infer that we're starting, it starts as Bishul Yisrael. And if you can just get to the finish line of Machal Ben Drusai, then we'll be safe. Okay, because then the Jew apparently has done the Bishul. And then it no longer, nothing can go wrong. But the Gemara says, yeah, but that means before Machal Ben Drusai, something could go wrong. So how could you tell me? How could Shmuel say that the Jew starts the Bishul and the non-Jew continues? It's mutter, assuming the Jew did something that could work. How could you say that? But here we say the Jew probably could do it. If you would leave it alone, it would get the Machal Ben Drusai. But because a non-Jew came in too early, so that ruined everything. So you see, it's not true. Right? And guys, you know, those are all the steps of inference that the Gemara doesn't say in Beirish. Obviously, all the steps of Cheshbon the Gemara is assuming. So the Gemara says, no, this is a very different situation. Hasn't gone to Osei B'Silta V'Shakle Akum V'Osei B'Tanura. The Jew must have put it into a silta. Machalok is showing what it means. But either way, it means that whatever, how you translate the word silta, it means that it was off the fire. It was on a piece of wood, or it was in a basket, whatever the silta is. But it was nostalgic min ha'esh. Nostalgic min ha'esh. And then the non-Jew put it back on the fire. That's different. So if the Jew started the cooking and the non-Jew accelerated the process, participated in the process, that's mutter. Assuming what the Jew did is significant. But if it came off the fire, went back on, so that's the problem. That lechora means, if you read Rishonim carefully, read the Ritva, maybe there are other ways of reading it. But the simple hagdara lechora is that we're being the difference between two cases is that we're differentiating between one ma'ase bishul and two ma'ase bishul. If there's a single ma'ase bishul, this is if those who learn the first part of chulin might be thinking about this in terms of the shahiyah sugyus, not exactly the same, but there's a lot of similarity. Just leave out the lumps of Shia Bamiyas Basar for now. As if it's a single Ma'aseh Bishul, so then the non-Jew's participation is not problematic. Keruvei Bishul, don't worry about Keruvei Bishul, because there's a single Ma'aseh Bishul that the Jews also involved in. Whereas if there are two separate Ma'aseh Bishul with Nostalgic Min Ha'esh, there was a point in time at which it was in a place where it could not continue to cook, and then it goes back on. So we can't see that as one hishtatfus. There were two separate ma'asim. The Jew did one ma'asim, and the non-Jew did a different ma'asim. And then we have to be down on each one separately. So then what? Then we say, well, did the Jew get to Machal Ben Drusai or not? We talk a case of the Jew's ma'asim is first and the non-Jew's ma'asim is second. The Jew got to Machal Ben Drusai, then you're safe. If the non-Jew did not get to Machal Ben Drusai, then you're not safe. And that's what appears in Sif Ches. In Shulchan Aruch, Nosin Yisrael Kedera Le'esh Silka Ba'akam Ve'chazira Aser, unless it already got to Machal Ben Drusai, Kishe Silka. He's Mekel, the Machal Ben Drusai, Shlish Bishulo. So if Rey got at least a third cooked in the first Maisa, then you're safe. That, by the way, teaches us several important things. Let's just tease apart some of the Hanachas here. If the Jew got it to Machal Ben Drusai, the first Ma'aseh Bishul, which here was a Jewish Ma'aseh Bishul, got to Machal Ben Drusai, so apparently we're saying, as is the case in other areas of Halacha, that is already enough to constitute a minimal Ma'aseh Bishul. Okay, so it is Bishul Yisrael. Now what's intriguing is, you could have still said, okay, but if these are two separate Ma'aseh Bishul, so there was an act which was clearly Bishul Yisrael, if the Jew didn't get it to Machal Ben Drusai, since it wasn't even a Ma'aseh Bishul, you would be potter on Shabbos. If I take raw food and I put it on the fire, but take it off after it's only 25% cooked, I'm potter. It's not a ma'aseh bishul. Bishul means for food, means gain at least to Macha Ben Drusai. Okay, so if the Jew did not get it to, it came off for Macha Ben Drusai, the Jew didn't do the Bishul. The only Mevashel is the non-Jew. So of course it's Asir. But the Gemara said, but if the Jew did get to Macha Ben Drusai, and then it comes off, and the non-Jew puts it back on, so Mutter, why? Well, because the Jew did Bishul Yisrael. Okay. But the non-Jew also did Bishul Akam. It cuts both ways. If they're two separate Maase Bishul, so there wasn't one act that was wholly Bishul Yisrael. Wasn't there also another act that was wholly Bishul Akam? The second act of Bishul was only the guy. The Jew wasn't involved at all. Now, this is a Machlokes Rishonim in the world of Hilchos Shabbos. How would you look at this? Once it's, could there be further Bishul beyond Machlokes Ben Drusai? Most probably the answer, and Machlokes Rishonim, Pasha is yes. There's, you cook it to Machlokes Ben Drusai, and then I get it to fully cook to Mavishul Kol Sargo. Could be those are both Maasei Bishul. It's intriguing that here that's not the case. Once it becomes Bishul Yisrael, it's locked in. The simplest nafkamina lemaisa in this is that rewarming leftovers is never bishul akum. By which I mean, for the non-Jew to rewarm the leftovers of the Jewish cooking, that's never bishul akum. Yeah.
The sif though does discuss at what point does it hit then bish, like the partial bishul as well, that you can have a bishul akum finish it up.
So that what we said is Machlokes Ben Drusai, Shlish Bishulo. Shlish Bishulo. That comes up sometimes in industrial situations. Also, there are certain food items that are meant, they're sold partially cooked. And you're meant to finish it off at home. Frozen pancakes and frozen waffles are an example of that. Rice, parboiled, sometimes certain types of rice. Like the minute rice, the reason why it cooks so quickly at home is because a lot of the cooking is already done. It's half cooked or third cooked or quarter cooked or three quarters cooked in the factory. That's called parboiled, P-A-R-B-O-I-L-E-D. So there are a number of items that you're meant to finish at home and are done partially in the factory. So that often comes up in this context. How much is done in the factory? How much is being done at home? Although that's actually in reverse order, which we'll have to get to, because there's often the nakri first. But thinking about that scenario, if the Jew, here we haven't yet gotten to the non-Jew first. Non-Jew first, I apologize. The example I just gave of the factory, that's typically, it's a non-Jews in the factory, and then a Jew cooking at home. The case that's most similar to what we're talking about is a Jew cooked, and then a non-Jew who's around the house is going to warm up leftovers. You have a non-Jewish babysitter who wants to warm up leftovers to give the kids lunch. Mashu kazeh. So in those scenarios, as we've discussed in the past, one major issue is you have to know that everything is, forget Bishul Akum, that all the ingredients and equipment are kosher. As a matter of fact, that's a point to be shown raised in the very next line in the Gemara. But assuming that you're comfortable with that, the question is how about Bishul Akum? So that's the best example. It's not just, the Jew didn't just get it to Shlish Bishul, the Jew got it to Mavushal Kol Tzarko. I served it for supper last night. So that's Mavushal Kol Tzarko. And now you're going to rewarm it. See, even if the Nachri left it in the fire, in the toast oven for long enough to have cooked it, yeah, but it already was cooked. It already was Bishul Yisrael. Even if it's not fully cooked, the Jew started it. And you might want to do that. Let's say you know that you're going to have a non-Jew put this food on the oven, you want it to be fresh for eating. So I'm going to cook it partially, put it in the fridge, and then the non-Jew is going to take it out and throw it in for another, throw the salmon back in the oven for another 10 minutes. So assuming the Jew got it to Machal Ben Drusai, Pashta Shlish means time. So if the salmon would take 25 minutes, so if I already put it in the oven for 9 minutes...
It's Shlish of Machal Ben Drusai.
No, Machal Ben Drusai is Shlish Bishulo. I already put it in for 10 minutes, and non-Jew, I put it back in the fridge. Non-Jew's going to put it in for another 15 minutes. So that's mutter. Okay. Then, okay. So far, so good. So that's, again, the pashtas. The Chalkas B'Yamin has a discussion that some of us take a look at. How do you understand the difference between case one and case two? Between where it stayed on the oven, fire the whole time, versus it came off and went back on. But the simplest way of understanding it Although the Ritva might not understand it that way. Simplest way of understanding it is it one Maisa Bishul or two Maisa Bishul? If it's one Maisa Bishul and Jew and non-Jew are both participating in that Maisa Bishul, that's Mutter. If it's two Maisa Bishuls, then you have to look at which one got to Macha ben Drizai and look at that one and see who got it over the 33-yard line. Okay. Then the Gemara says we have a brisa that supports this. The Jew could put the meat on the fire, on the coals, and then the Jew goes to shul. He goes to shul. He goes to Beis Medrash and leaves a non-Jew dealing with the meat on the grill. The Eino Choshe. We show him do discuss, and we're going to have to come back to the fact that there's a Nemanus issue here as well, which is not really our focus. Nemanus that the. That the non-Jew didn't mess around with the meat too much. Okay. And then the second case is Shofesa's Isha. Here we move from a male situation to a female situation. It seems like the classic scenario where the men were handling the grill, the men were doing the grilling, and the women were doing the cooking. That seems to be the assumption. Okay, then you have Shofesa's Isha Kedera Gabekira. You have a pot on the stovetop, so you have a Jewish woman who gets it started, and then Boss Akum. And then you can leave the non-Jewish woman stirring the pot while the Jewish woman heads off, interesting, to the merchatz or to the Beis HaKnesses. Apparently it was common, but Kufas Chazal, that women went to shul, as an aside. And this isn't a Shabbos, obviously, because we're stirring pots and cooking. Maybe it was Yom Tov. It's hard to imagine we're only talking about Yom Tov. It sounds as though it was a not uncommon scenario for women to go to shul during the week. Interesting ha'ara.
Drop off the food for the
kol. Did she say Beis HaMedrash? She said Beis HaKnesses.
But she's stirring the food for the kol, so that's not possible.
Maybe.
She was actually
Perhaps. Perhaps. So what was the point? The point was, this is a scenario where it's on Mimushach the whole time without coming off. And as a Jew put it on, the non-Jew is doing things which sound like they're substantive. You're being magus. You should not be helping the cooking process. But at the same time, the Jew did enough. The Jew or non-Jew did enough. The Jew or Jewish man or Jewish woman did enough initially that even though the non-Jew is participating as well, they're both participants. And that is mutter. But then the Gemara on Amud Beis starts talking about even before we look at the Gemara on Amud Beis, this din appears in Shulchan Aruch, what we just learned, both din that we just learned. Right? Sivches, as you saw, as we just read, is the second half of Lamed Ches Lamed Aleph about the two separate Maaseh Bishul. Sivvav is about one Maaseh Bishul, and it gives both cases. The case we saw already, the Jew first, as well as the case we're about to see, the Jew second. So let's just zero in for a moment. The end of Sivvav, Heniach Yisrael, the Gomar Akum, Harei Zem Mutter. Okay, that's the din on Lamed Ches Lamed Aleph. Then the Ramah goes on to say, I feel lo haya mizbasha below si'ua ha'akum. Even if it would not have cooked at all without the guy's help. And that is a shocking Ramah. And the Achronim all jump over the Ramah, not actually against the Gemara. The Gemara said, Beferish. That was the second line of the Gemara. That this hachamai eskinon, that it would have cooked. If what the Jew did was utterly insufficient, wouldn't have cooked at all. Ramah seems to just ignore the Gemara. That's really shocking. Now, the Gemara here, the Raman Sivav says if a Jew put it on the fire and then the non-Jew continues and it would not have cooked without the non-Jew's help, it's still mutter. That's beferish against the very first thing that the Amoraim said about the Mamre Shmuel. Right? He said, hey Chidami, if what the non-Jew did is unnecessary, so of course it's mutter. If what the non-Jew did is critical, so it's takana mutter. Because that's not the Jew's bishul, that's a non-Jew's bishul. The Raman just ignores that. It was not mizbashu, that's siyu ha'akum, it's still mutter. So Achram say, that's wild. That's one tema. That's the first tema here.
Isn't it based off Tosfos?
What do you mean?
Tosfos, the new book.
Very good. Very good. So let's take a look. Right? The Hashlachas Kisim doesn't seem to be significant. Right now, as we said before, Amud Aleph was dedicated to the scenario where the Jew begins and the non-Jew continues. Now we flip it. The non-Jew begins and the Jew comes in the middle. Right? You walk into the kitchen and the non-Jewish help wants to surprise you for your birthday with your favorite type of Spanish omelet, which is very sweet, and kava nasa ritzuya, but it could be the maaseha enim ritzuyim. Problem is, it's coming from a wonderful place. It might be treif, though. We have to figure out, are the eggs treif? And as we discussed, we have to figure out, is the pan treif? And the kasher, a frying pan, is not a... So most things in the kitchen are used to kasher. A frying pan is not. A frying pan might require a libun. So that's what we're talking about here now, where the non-Jew began, and then the Jew walks in the middle, and what can the Jew do to save the situation? Can you do anything to save the situation? How about the non-Jew put the food on the floor? And the Jew shows up and says, whoa, so if I flip the burger, will that be matir the burger? If I stir the pot, will I stir the wok? Will that be matir what was already on track to become bishalakam? So Amar Rav Nachman Yitzchak kal v'chomer, gomro b'yad akum mutter, gomro b'yad Yisrael l'kol shken. Rav Nachman says, absolutely mutter, for sure. If on Amar Alf it was mutter, Amar Beis is certainly mutter.
Gomro b'yad akum, the non-Jew finished it off. Wow.
The non-Jew put on the finishing touches and still it's mutter on Amud Aleph. So Kalashka, and if the Jew put on the finishing touches, it should certainly
be mutter. Yeah. So how does that strike you?
Is that what you say?
Yeah.
Number one, Bechlal, what's the Svara? And is it against Amud Beis? Bechlal, what's the Svara? Why, since when are we all about the Gemara? And isn't it against Amud Aleph? Amud Aleph seemed like it was the reverse. And now all of a sudden we only... And let's sharpen this. Is on Amud Aleph, it seemed like we were very focused on the Maaseh Bishul. This does not sound like so much of a focus on the Maaseh Bishul. What this does sound like is a focus on the beginning of Amud Aleph. The Gamar B'yai Yisrael, and even the guys who just joined, you had a chance to see the very beginning of the Sugya of Bishul Akam. So the definitions of what sort of food they present the Bishul Akam problem is the one that's Nech Kamo Shulchai. On the other hand, it's Olal Shulchum Lachem. And by the time you're done, it's not only cooked and edible, but highly presentable. So there is a focus in terms of Bishul Akam on the finished product, especially we saw Eliyahu seen when we learned the opening sif. The Rambam says that second condition is very central because that's all about chasnas, right? The whole point is you have a food which is socially significant, it's all shulchan lachem, and then there's a real concern of where this is going to lead. So to focus on the Gemar sounds like it's less of a focus on the Maaseh Bishul and more of a focus on the final product. It's more of like a specific Bishul Akam type of thinking. So that's an interesting shift. And then as Zaborgen pointed out, the idea of Shlachas Kisim is also curious. And the idea of Eish Me'esh is also curious. And that's something that the Bai Tosa, according from the work of the Gaonim, the Minhag Mishnah Bnei Bal Bnei Eretz Yisrael, and that doesn't seem to be a part of the Maaseh Bishul. Now, let's not jump ahead of ourselves, because that might not be the case. Because if the food is already cooked, if food is on the fire, and I throw a kisim in, I am participating in the Maaseh Bishul. Now, I might not be making such an incredibly significant participation, but I am participating in the Maaseh Bishul. What's more surprising is the fact that the Gemara goes on, the next piece of Gemara goes on to talk about, well, the Jew lit the fire, and then the non-Jew puts the bread in the oven. If the non-Jew puts the bread in the cold oven first, and the Jew lights the fire, so I might say that's mamash and Maaseh Bishul, even from a Hilchos Shabbos perspective. And if there's food already there, and I light the fire, that's two malachas. I did maver and I did bishul because I lit the fire under the food's right there. If I light the fire and the food's not there, and food's only going to arrive later, so I haven't done a maaseh bishul. So that in the Gemara, that's in the next line, the Hilchasa, the Gemara sounds like Shagay Yisrael va'afa akum. Sounds like the Jew lit the fire first, and the non-Jew is putting the bread second. Or Shagar Akum V'Afa. Yeah. So that's intriguing. And then the Rishonim even go on, the Ramah is going to go on to talk about Eish Me Eish. A Jew lights a fire, and then a non-Jew takes a match, and from that fire brings it to the oven, and that's where the cooking is happening. That's very surprising. How is that an act of bishul? And then there's yet another problem. How many of you have seen SIF tests? I assume few, if any. Oh, okay. The din of it sounds l'chor like the second din on Amud Aleph. The second din on Amud Aleph, of where there were two separate Maaseh Bishul. How about if we would flip them? And the Jew cooked first, and the non-Jew cooked first, and the Jew cooked second. So it's a machlokes Rishonim whether everything is parallel or not. There are a lot of pieces that aren't lining up. Again, rooted in, it sounds like the Gemara, when we move from Avon Alf to Avon Beis, it sounds like the Gemara changes its basic. It's not just that we're changing cases from talking about Jew first, non-Jew second, to talking about non-Jew first, Jew second, but it sounds like we're changing what svara we're working with. Are we looking at definitions of bishul, or are we looking at who finished it off? Which sounds like it's very different. We're looking at bishul, or we're looking at participation, or we're looking at final product. Those are all possibilities. Those are all possibilities. So, as I said before, we have another week ahead of us in the sugya. So, I want to sketch out the outline of the sugyas and sketch out a number of questions. And let's review what some of those questions are. Then I'll leave with one final piece to look at over the course of the coming week that hopefully will help to bring things together. Again, one major problem here is the Ramah. The Ramah in Sifav, it doesn't even begin with the Ramah. If you look back in the Beis Yosef, he seems to point out that the Tur and the Ramah already seem to be sort of ignoring part of the Gemara Naman Alf. They say if the Jews started even a way that was insufficient, it couldn't have cooked at all. Some of them seem to imply that's mutter. So the Beis Yosef has a teretz, but then the Rama seems to say beferish against the Gemara. That's problem number one. So the Taz talks about it, the Shach talks about it, and you should pay attention when you get to that. That's in the second half of the Rama Kavim. So the Shach and Taz seem to be taking somewhat different approaches. It seems that there's a lot going on below the surface in terms of how you read that. That's the most obvious problem. Borgand raised the problem of Kissim and of Eish Me'esh, which doesn't seem to fit with thinking about Bishul, especially if it's happening before the food even gets in Bechlal. The notion of, that appears even the Gemara, of the Jew lights the fire, then the non-Jew puts the bread in. How could you call that Bishul Yisrael? You would never call that from a Hilchos Shabbos perspective, Bishul Yisrael. I lit a fire, and then the non-Jew came and cooked something on the fire? That's my Bishul? That's my Afia? Of course not. It's Beferish. It's Beferish Brayis and Masechta Shabbos. So that's So the Ramon Sivav is very strange. And the Gemara of Shagar Yisrael of Akum, that's Mutter, that's very strange. And then even taking even further, the notion of Eish Me'esh, that's taking that to yet another step. And the fact that the Gemara seems to switch Svaris, this idea, this Kal V'chomer of Gamro B'yad Yisrael Okolshkin, doesn't seem to fit with the logic of Amun Alf. Akasha number 5 is when you get to Siftes, you're going to see Siftes is very, very difficult. Machlokas Rashba Rash, which once again, yet another sort of discontinuity between Amun Alf and Amun Beis. The Rashba assumes everything is parallel in the two cases, and the Rash seems to say it's not parallel. So that's 5 kashas, right? Difficult Ramah in Sivav. And the din of the fact that Shagar Yisrael lighting the fire, the Gemara and Amud Beis, Yisrael lighting the fire before the Brizim were there, that's Matir, and then the idea of Eish Me Eish, and the idea of Eish Me Eish, and what was the fourth Kasha was the switch in Svara, the Gemara about the Kal V'chomer, and the fifth problem with Siftes, Machlokas Rajman Rush is very difficult, and the Ramah followed. Once again, a lot of Shvera Ramahs. 5 kashas. So, 5 kashas that I think, if you think carefully about the Shach and Sif Vav, I think they all coalesce. Once you can crack the code, they all hang together, all the kashas. And the key maybe is a sixth point to look at, which after you've gone through the Gemara thoroughly, when you look back, I left you the Rambam in the beginning of the second half of the Maamar Kamos. Because you're going to want to look. The Rambam here is very, very intriguing. And it's a great example of part of the richness and complexity of learning Rambam that I'm sure you've all seen many times in the past, is because of the Rambam genre. The Rambam is not writing Chidushim al Hashas. The Rambam is just trying to, he would say, simply trying to write down the Maskanos of the Torah Shebaal Peh. He's trying to give you whatever's Halacha L'maisa. So he is intentionally cutting out all the Shach of Itariah. He is intentionally not presenting things al Seder HaShas. He's just giving you what's Lamaskam. So oftentimes you'll notice how the Ram did have Mechudish Dikaways of reading Gemaras. He's just not going to make a point of them. He's just giving you what he thinks the Gemara says. But sometimes you look subtly, you'll see, oh, he seems to be quoting the Gemara in a very different way than the other Rishonim look at it. Oh, he must have read the Gemara like this, like that. But sometimes it's even more subtle, where you look at what the Gemara Rambam leaves out. What the Rambam leaves out is very significant, because it typically means he does, if there's something that appears in the Shas that doesn't appear in Rambam, that probably means it doesn't pass him that way. So I want you to look very, very carefully at the very little the Rambam has to say about our sugya. There's a lot of, you would have expected Rambam would have a lot to say about the sugya. There's so many different cases that the Gemara had, and there's surprisingly little in Rambam. So that's the first thing that might strike you. Rambam's not as long as you would have expected, which is going to make you want to figure out, well, what, how that happened. You go back and forth between the Gemara and Rambam and see, is it that he's quoting things b'kitzer, or is he leaving parts out? And if you stop assuming that you know certain deen because of the Gemara, and try just learning the Rambam, after having learned the Gemara, just learn the Rambam and try to figure out, what dinim is the Rambam actually presenting? What would the din be according to simple reading the Rambam? And how surprising is that? And how did he read the Gemara to come to his conclusion? The Rambam's hashmatos here are very, very significant. Work through that, I think you'll see something very, very fascinating, I think emerges from how the Rambam appears to have understood the Gemara lemaskana, for what he does quote, for what he doesn't quote, how he says over what parts he is quoting, and which parts he's choosing not to quote. And then, if you figure out how the Rambam is reading the Gemara, I think you'll understand the Shach on Sivav, and all the other pieces will begin to fall into place as well. So hopefully this was a productive, this week, Limud and today's Chabur was a productive first step. That was the concept. And now, going forward for the rest of today and into next week, I'll begin to put more pieces together, see the end of the Gemara, and begin to see more of the Rishonim, specifically the Rambam, and more of the Turin Beis Yosef, and some of the other Rishonim who give some more twists in the Rif, and then we'll try to put together all 5 Se'ifim, Vav, Zayin, Ches, Tes, Yud, which together are the whole picture together are the whole picture of this sugya of Hishtat versus Yisrael v'Nachri in Bishul, when is the Mutter, when is the Nasr. Shkai Chavar. I hope this left you with questions and some more clarity and some more direction going forward.